Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 267 for comics originally released on September 19th, 2012. Now, starting us off in DC is Sword of Sorcery number 0. This is one of the four new titles of what I had been kind of referring to as Wave 3, and fortunately in their advertising, so is DC, so that's kind of convenient. This is another $3.99 book. It means it's got a main feature and a backup feature. Main feature is Amethyst, backup feature is Beowulf, and I had kind of thought that was going to be a really odd mix. But before we get to Beowulf, let's talk about Amethyst some. I enjoyed Amethyst when it first came out way back when. They later did, first it was a 12-issue miniseries, then it was an ongoing. Later they did like 4-issue miniseries or whatever, trying to kind of tie it into the Legion continuity with the world that White Witch was from and stuff. And at that point it's like, okay, they've gone a little too far. But the original stuff I really enjoyed. And what they're doing here is clearly kind of evocative of, but also very clearly kind of reimagined. I mean, Amy Winston, the alter ego of Amethyst, looks very different. You know, dark hair, purple highlights, a much darker, harsher look to her, because she was almost, I don't say like a cheerleader or whatever, but a blonde, you know, very upbeat kind of a girl or whatever, originally. And man, the way they set up the do they actually call it the Gem World here?
No, I didn't okay. See him do that.
But man, the way they set up Amy's aunt, with just, oh, you're part of the bloodline, I shall vaporize you. It's like, well, that's kind of hardcore. But it's funny, because in the span of, like, 2 pages there, really just the one where she's vaporizing the one kid, they really set up that there is power in the bloodline by killing off the other person, you know, she gets that power and stuff. And, you know, very quickly in the span of that page, sets up kind of the crux of the conflict between Amy's mom and Amy's aunt, and how Amy is inevitably sucked into the middle of that. She has no choice but to be involved. And, you know, I liked how they did that. So I thought they did a fairly good job here setting the scene, establishing stuff. But, I mean, really, most of this was just that, set up, and there wasn't quite the level of payoff, quite the level of, okay, now she's, I mean, she ends as Amethyst, not really named as such, but I'm expecting, like, next issue we could get really a lot more information and really kind of kick the story into high gear there. What we had here was good, but, again, just set up, just not even origin material, but, you know, I'm still waiting for the story to kind of really get into high gear. I mean, what did you think?
I really liked it. I'll give you that it was set up, but, you know, as I was reading this, I was engaged the entire time.
Yeah.
I really liked the characterization. I really liked how the story was flowing. I liked, as you said, you know, with the aunt and the setup and everything. I think it was necessary setup because they showed, I mean, I don't want to like give away the whole story, but I mean, it showed that she was being prepared, you know.
I mean, as far as setup goes, you're right. It was very effective and very good setup and very engaging setup. And I think you're right, very necessary. I don't think they could have just started of, boom, she's in the Gem World and fighting, and we're like, how come?
Yeah. So while it was set up, you know, I think the difference I'll make is sometimes there's setup that is necessary setup, and you can kind of see that it needs to happen, and it's done in an engaging sort of way, like here. Mm-hmm. And other times I'll read something and, you know, we'll say, oh, this felt like it was just set up. In those cases, it's set up where it doesn't feel like anything happened. And it just feels like I sat through an entire issue of preliminary information before the real story happened. You know, in this case, I was completely engaged the whole story. I really enjoyed this. And when I put this down, you know, I finished the story and then I read Beowulf. But I mean, when I read this story, at the end, it's not completely typical that I just thought to myself, wow, that was a really good story. You know, a lot of times I'll read something and it's just like, you know, that was a good story. You know, it's like, okay, you know, those are things I usually give a 4 out of 5 to. I'm giving this one a 5 because I got to the end of it and I was like, wow, that was really good.
Interesting.
It was very different. And it's just, I think DC, they have a knack with me anyway, when they do these kinds of, you know, like when they did Demon Knights and, you know, these kind of not standard superhero stories that I've seen it so many times before. And it's kind of like, it seems to me like it's almost a minor variation. This just felt very cool and very different to me. And I really enjoyed it.
I mean, to me, this story was a 4 out of 5, a little bit of a low 4. And I mean, I can see where you're coming from. Certainly the fact it's not just another superhero thing helps it stand out from all the other comics out there. There were a few aspects of this that made me think that had the original Amethyst been done after Buffy the Vampire Slayer, we would have gotten something more like this originally. And I'm not saying it's redundant to Buffy or whatever, but there's strong young female lead, getting trained. There are similar aspects. But I think the point you made about how this was a very satisfying first issue, yes, it was set up, but it was necessary, reminds me, and I forget which title it was. I think it was an Image title where, and it might have been a time travel kind of a thing. We read the first issue, we talked about the first issue, or at least I did and stuff, and when the second issue came out, it's like, you know, they could have just started with that and skipped the first one entirely. It was that unnecessary of a setup. And this is not that way at all. The stuff they do here, like you said, they kind of have to do to really establish her character to where presumably what happens next will feel natural, logical, and in character for Amy and stuff. So I think they did a really good job, and I like how DC is constantly trying to have a couple of titles out there that are fantasy or sort of sorcery or western or war or something other than just standard superheroics. I think that's a very smart move on their part. So again, I thought they did a really good job with this. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go. The cameo at the end I hadn't really expected, but frankly I probably should have, knowing that Amethyst is going to appear elsewhere in the new 52 titles. But the way they set that up in this issue made sense, and it's like, okay, I wonder where they're going with this. So what'd you think about Beowulf?
I liked Beowulf too. It was, and again, I read the original Beowulf. I don't, by DC, right? I don't remember that much about it. It was there, you know. This, I thought, was a well-done reimagining of the story. I mean, we got a lot of the main characters from the Beowulf legend. They switched it up on you and kind of went to this kind of future, you know, kind of post-apocalyptic kind of thing, instead of having it be the you know, way in the past, sword and sorcery, kind of even a sort of sorcery, right? But it's not like that long past landscape. You know, here you've got the devastated military base, and just the art on this really, really impressed me. You know, and Jesus Saiz, I mean, I really liked him when he was doing Birds of Prey. That was the one he was doing, right, originally?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, he did an excellent job on the art here. You know, but we've got Beowulf, we've got King Hrothgar, we've got, you know, the Grendel character, not shown, but established as, you know, kind of the bad guy that needs to be dealt with. You know, you didn't have that much here. It wasn't that long of a story, but I thought it was effective in what it was. This is the kind of thing that, you know, you're going to get in small doses. It worked for me as it was. I think it'll work really well when they ultimately collect it in some kind of a trade paperback and you get the story.
Yeah.
This one I can see being a story with a beginning, middle, and end to it. Hopefully the book will stick around long enough to allow them to tell that entire story.
I think this title is guaranteed to last long enough for at least Amethyst and Beowulf to run their course. Whether it sticks around after that, I mean, who knows. As far as Beowulf goes, I hadn't read the original 6-issue Beowulf Dragon Slayer series they did back in, I guess, 75, 76. That was kind of really just before I'd gotten into comics. And even if I'd been in the comics at the times, I was more into the superhero stuff than that kind of, you know, really, it was a fantasy title at that point. And I don't think they've reprinted those stories anywhere. Because if they'd put them in one of the digests or something like that, then I might have read them there. So I was coming at this kind of completely cold or whatever, and I really thought they did a very effective job in the few pages they had. It was only a 10-page story or whatever. But like when the kid's realizing, you know, this guy is just going to slaughter me if I don't think of something fast. His solution to that, I thought, was really clever. It's like, wow, that kid's got some brains.
Yeah, that was really well done, you know.
And not something I felt like I've seen 100 times before or something. It's like, okay, cool. The only thing I would say is a downside to this is it was too short. I wanted more. It was really engaging, and they could have gone for, you know, if this is, I don't know how many parts this story has. You know, if it's 6 parts, they could do this in a 60-page, you know, kind of a thing. Hell, if it's 8 parts, they could do it in an 80-page. In other words, they could have done it as a single one-shot, and I think I would have been very happy. That having been said, if they had done it as a single one-shot, I'm not positive I've gotten everything else in the New 52. I probably would have gotten it, but it wouldn't have been a guaranteed thing. If it had been a month where it's like, ooh, there's some big-ticket items, like an artist edition I want to get and I need to cut somewhere, I could see if it had just been a Beowulf issue, I might have cut that. So I like this a lot more than I expected it to. This is one of the cases where having it as a backup feature really benefited it, because I would now follow this property with this creative team to its own book if it went to that. So I was very pleased. I thought it was a fun read. I want to see where they go with it. It's also a better match for Amethyst than I was afraid it might be. I was at first thinking, wow, that's an odd combination.
Anyway, I think that anyone who skipped this should definitely give it a flip through at your local comic shop.
Yeah.
And see if you like it, because I thought this was a really well done comic book. One of the best, you know, it's like it's one of the best first issues, at least as far as really grabbing me and getting me excited about a property that I've read in a while.
Mm-hmm. So for the overall issue?
Yeah, which is why I gave it a 5, because I thought it was an extremely well done, for me, first issue, especially with the Zero issue. I mean, it was Zero month and everything, and it kind of fit into that, you know, where we get the origin and everything, but it didn't feel like a throwaway, you know. And a lot of times Zero issues, when they start with them, they kind of feel like throwaway issues or something, or they feel like they're short, abbreviated, or, you know, there's just something about them where they just feel kind of funny, you know. This one just, it felt like a really great, you know, the series has started, here you go.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Had they decided to wait and just do it as a first issue, I think they could have done that just as well.
Yeah, it could have easily been number one.
It didn't feel forced to put it in the Zero month. I mean, for me, the issue was a very strong 4 out of 5. Definitely something I, too, would recommend people check out at the stores. Because I expect quite a few people will have just skipped over it, which is too bad. Shall we move on to the first of the two Marvel books we're going to talk about?
Sure. Now, this one, we had originally planned to talk about issue 15 of the Ultimates in Marvel. And I guess they shipped 15 and 16 on 2 consecutive weeks. And since I was...
Yeah. Came out on the 19th, and then 16 on the 26th. But you pick that up at the store. I get my shipment on Friday, so I just got that one yesterday.
Right. So since I was buying this off the rack anyway, I had this, and it wasn't something where I had to wait for my DCBS books to come. And you, John, are now getting your DCBS books on Fridays.
Yep.
Which is very cool for you. I'm still getting mine on the following Tuesday. Nah. You know.
Sucks to be you.
Sucks to be in California for that reason only. Anyway, since we have both of them and it's a continuing story, we thought we may as well talk about both of them. Now, I'm looking for some insight from you on this, because I picked this up, issue 15. It's Divided We Fall, part 3, by the time I get to California. They have a very short, scene setting blurb in the beginning of this issue. America is falling apart. Washington, D.C. has been decimated. The U.S. government is in turmoil. The Southwest is in chaos. States are seceding from the Union. The West Coast nation has a refugee problem and new technology to stop it. Divided, we fall. And then we get this map, and, you know, it's SHIELD situation map, and they've got, you know, which states are the West Coast nation and the Mexico, the Sentinel controlled no man's land, Great Lakes state, Eastern Seaboard control zone, and then a bunch, you know, a bunch of states that are still part of the United States. What I didn't get out of this, and I thought they could have done a better job of, was, you know, you have this whole page. They could have actually explained why some of this stuff was happening, and what the deal was. I mean, I sort of picked it up as I went along. I thought that it was a, it's interesting because it's very different, you know, than your standard Marvel story. And since, one thing that really did feel interesting to me here was with Sam Humphries writing this instead of Bendis, I felt like I got a decent amount of story. I mean, what happened in this issue and then in the following issue would have probably, you know, been 5 or 6 issues of a Bendis story. So I think the story was moving along at a decent pace, but as a result, I still don't have a good understanding of how we got into this situation. Although, once, you know, I'm here, I just, you know, I'm along for the ride and I'm following along with it. And I was entertained by the story. But, you know, it's just what I would have liked to see was a little bit more, since they have the kind of setup page and everything anyway, someone put in a little more thought into bringing me up to speed.
Yeah, I think they definitely should have done that in this issue. Certainly in the next, they certainly should have, because a part of why we picked this is you had seen the news article about what's going to happen in the next issue and is led up to here of Cap becoming president. I mean, they've put that in the news, so yes, it's a spoiler, but, you know, blame Marvel, not me.
And I was minding my own business, and it was on television and in the newspaper and all this kind of stuff, so.
I mean, when they're doing that kind of media push, and when the solicitation is the word classified, it's like, come on, guys. You know, if you expect people to jump on with these issues, get them into the story. Particularly if you say part 3, that may turn some people off right off the bat.
Yeah. And this is the issue, though, because when and Cap actually does become president in the end of issue 15, and actually the whole setup, and
he takes the oath in the next.
He takes the oath in the next issue, but the end of this issue was, you know, they have the election going on.
Well, I want to talk about the timeline in this in a sec, so let's keep going.
But I mean, the point I'm trying to make is issue 15 is the one that people would probably have been driven to by the news, even though 16 is the one with Cap standing on the cover with his hand up, you know, on the Bible.
I think they did them weekly so they could push to both.
Right. But the reason I say that is because when I saw the stuff on the newspaper and everything, the issue that was on the racks at that time, because it was it was the week before, was issue 15, and it was probably around, I forget what exact day it was around Wednesday or Thursday, but it would was the day Wednesday. That 15 came out, and 16 didn't come out until the following week. So if people
at
saw
which
that
point,
news
they did
went,
another promotional push saying, oh, he's taking the oath today. So I think they timed it to where they could do one push that Wednesday, one push this Wednesday, and really try to get people onto both. So both issues should have had a heavy recap explaining, here's what led up to this, and then get going.
So, you know, they knew, theoretically, that they were pushing people in. So, you know, again, having this entire page here, you know, drop the font down a little bit, take this giant U.S. picture with Captain America running along, you know, on it out, and just put a little bit more text like I've seen in a bunch of other Marvel comic books. You know, it's not like it's an arcane art that they've never heard of before, and just explain the premise of what's going on.
Yeah, no, they totally should have. Frankly, I thought this was a horrible issue to use as a jumping on issue for new readers. Going over the timeline of this, first off, I'm getting really tired of these situation maps because we're getting them in pretty much every issue of most of the Ultimate titles, and they're changing a little each time, but frankly, too subtle for me to really notice or care. So I consider that a waste of a page. For a new reader, it might be handy. But the timeline on this is we're starting on the morning of this one day where the polls are opening on a special election. Because of what's happened previously in the Ultimate Universe, Washington, D.C. has been devastated. Sentinels have run loose, rounding up mutants and stuff. The U.S. is literally in chaos and almost a dystopic point at that point. So they're having a presidential recall election to where basically people can write in saying, yeah, I'd rather have this guy as president than this guy who just kind of lucked into it because he survived. So that happens. We're at the morning watching VNN, which is their CNN equivalent. Fine, whatever. Presumably it's Video News Network, but who cares? And they're giving us kind of the highlights, and, you know, here's how bad things are in these various parts of the country. Cap is talking to the president from Dallas. I want to point out he's in Dallas at this point. A page or two later, he is somewhere along the New Mexico-Texas state border.
I knew that was going to get you, because how long it takes you to drive.
And he shows up in a Jeep. He didn't necessarily have to drive the whole way, but it would have been nice to know how he got there, since he's being told by the president to just, you know, stay put. He talks to Nick Fury for a bit. That read like a Bendis scene, because it went on a little too long. And then the next time we see Cap, a couple of pages later, he's in Blythe, California. You know, which is, again, right on the border of California and stuff. And again, all of this same day, not sure if it's lunchtime yet or what, and he's fighting these drones that have kind of gone nuts and are, you know, obliterating the citizenry. This gets on news, because, yes, it's a dystopic point in the American history, but that doesn't stop 24-hour news. What would? People say, wow, he's fighting these drones. Golly, I'll write him in as president, because why wouldn't you? Now, granted, why wouldn't you do that for Hawkeye, Black Widow, or any of these other heroes? But fine, whatever. I think it would have been more funny if they'd written in the Hulk and he won. We get a subplot to set up who's going to be the big threat of the upcoming story arc. Great. We see him, Cap, continuing to fight. We get Iron Man. Thor does a little bit of stuff. And then, by sundown, they have defeated all the drones, almost literally as the sun is setting. And VNN has already confirmed the results of this election. Now, the polls apparently closed before sundown, or Cap won by a major landslide, or apparently Hawaii just doesn't matter anymore, or Alaska for that matter. I mean, there should be hours left in the election. There should be the whole, I don't know, vote counting thing going on. And, you know, maybe this whole drone attack thing in California might have been enough to, I don't know, postpone or shut down the election there, because I would think people would be a little worried if, well, should I go out and vote, or do I not want to get obliterated by these drones? The timeline.
Well, people in California weren't voting, right?
I'm assuming it was a nationwide thing. I thought that's
what
they
said. Yeah,
but
they're a different nation at this point. I was assuming, well, I don't know, at least when I read the story, I was assuming, okay, so California, these orange states on the map, had seceded from the Union, and they're their own thing at this point. So this election, and I don't know exactly what the deal is with the yellow states, the blue states, or the green states. On here, it seemed like they have seceded from the Union, too, and are doing something, but they don't really talk about them in this story.
Well, let me point out two things that I think run counter to that theory. One, the VNN says it's opening, polls opening across America. Okay, a little ambiguous, what is America? Fine. But when we get Cap having done some of that stuff, it sure looks like from the footage, maybe they're just intercutting it and it's unclear, that these could be people there in, California having done it. I mean, did you see that move, Unreal, yes, etc.? It sure seems like they're right there.
I understand, but what I'm saying, and this, what's not clear about this story, is that they're talking about how all these parts of the country have seceded, right? And I haven't read all the stuff that led up to this, but they are talking about, and they concentrate on California in this story, that at least California, Oregon, and Washington have seceded from the Union and become their own thing. That's why they've got these drones, you know, like killing people if they try to come into the western West Coast, whatever the heck they're calling it, West Coast Union or something like that. The parts of the map that are white, I mean, it's like the real America that the Republicans talk about. I mean, you don't have any of the hippies on the West Coast. New England is totally out. You don't have, you know, Chicago and Minneapolis and, you know, you don't have the Rust Belt states on there. The green states, I'm not quite so sure, because those are just sentinels going around doing some crazy stuff, and they're supposed to be a no man's land. But the states that are white on here, that's what's listed on the map as being the U.S. government controlled zones. Interestingly, it's the upper peninsula of Michigan, not the bottom. I guess they just got cut loose. And then a bunch of, you know, you got like Nevada, Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Colorado, Nebraska, you know, a whole bunch, you know. Then you got the South, and you got Texas and Florida. West Virginia got left out in the cold there, and Tennessee, or Kentucky rather, and Tennessee. But you know what I mean? If you look at that map, it's like, okay, it's saying, and I'm coming into this from, I don't know what has gone on with these things. I just know what's listed on this map as being U.S. government controlled, and then these other things, and they're talking about states have seceded from the Union all over the place. So I was kind of like looking at it and like, well, that's kind of weird. I mean, if the U.S. is electing someone, then it's like, you know,
it's unclear somewhat, exactly where the elections are taking place and where they're not. I agree with that.
And it's somewhat approximating maybe a third to a half of the actual population of the United States, you know, from the states that are white here.
What's interesting is both Alaska and Hawaii are still part of the U.S. and therefore should have been part of the election.
But as you point out from the timeline, you know, it's like the polls weren't closed there, so.
It's kind of crazy, because one of the other things that happened in a very recent issue of The Ultimates, and I forget which one it was, it could have been as recent as 14, it might have been 12 or 13. For a while, Cap had just kind of gone off, and he just suddenly came back. So he's a pretty recent, you know, get him back into the story, re-edition sort of a deal. And the whole point of this issue was, let's go from, okay, he's back in action, to let's get him elected. And it's how can we cram that into a single issue? And, I mean, as a roller coaster ride kind of a comic, it's not bad. The minute you stop and think about the plot, or let's scratch that, the story. I think plot's a little heavy-handed to use for this issue. The story falls apart pretty quickly in terms of any kind of inherent logic, how certain things could have happened. And again, who was voting, who wasn't, you know. How did he get from place to place so quickly? I mean, halfway across country, in the span of, you know, a few hours with a couple of stops here and there. This issue did what it set out to do. I don't think it was a great issue in and of itself. I certainly don't think it was a great jumping on point. I certainly don't think people coming in from, oh, wow, Cap's going to be president, to reading this would say, yep, I'm going to keep reading comics for here till eternity or whatever. I mean, to me, this was an average comic at best. You know, I'm going to give it a 3, but I've considered, is it getting that 2?
Well, on a side note there, I will say, you know, if a regular person comes in to read this, it was, I will completely agree with you that it was very superficial, but, you know, there was a lot of disjointed action and things just happening, boom, boom, boom. It was kind of like the comic book equivalent of, like, you know, like a Michael Bay Transformers movie or something. Not exactly, but you kind of get the thing. It's like things happen and there's not necessarily a lot of, if you start thinking about it too hard, the whole structure starts to crumble apart, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was like that. So, like, someone who's going to be driven to this, I'm not convinced that it's that different from the kind of entertainment that they're used to be getting, you know, served up to them by Hollywood. It's kind of on par with that. You know, it's like,
well, in part, but very on par valid. For the depth.
Yeah.
But as terms of the return on the dollar investment.
Sure.
This is what, half or a third of the cost of a movie ticket. And you get a fraction of a story and maybe 10, 15 minutes of entertainment versus a 2-hour movie.
Yeah. You have that. I'm just pointing out that, you know, what goes on here, is very, high level and superficial, and things just happen. But that was where I was getting at, is a very different end of the spectrum than what I will usually observe about a Bendis story, where, you know, like when you have Ultimate Comics Spider-Man and it took him like 6 issues to like exhibit the kid's full set of powers and, you know, get him in a costume and doing stuff. I mean, it's here, it's just like, you know, stuff, you know, things are just happening all over the place and you're cutting scene to scene and, you know, it's like, okay.
Lots it's of stuff. Not decompressed. I would agree with that. And in that respect, the fact that it covers more ground is better. The fact that it literally covers more ground, I think, adds to the superficiality of it. And I don't think that aspect is beneficial, but you're right. It's a very different kind of a storytelling style than we get in, again, a classic Bendis book. I would agree with that. And I think you're right that it fits the storytelling mentality that most summer blockbuster movies hit. You know, that kind of style or whatever, roller coaster ride, a lot of action, a lot of explosions, that kind of stuff. Not necessarily huge plot depth. So maybe it'll be successful in keeping readers around. I don't know. I'd be surprised.
I guess, you know, the unstated point there is like, yes, it does follow that model, but is that something really to aspire to as a storytelling style? So
there is that. That is true.
But, I mean, I read it and I thought, okay, well, that what I took away from it, though, was, you know, they've really now differentiated the Ultimate Universe from the standard 616. I mean, they're what I like about it is they are doing a bunch of just wild storyline stuff in the Ultimate Universe that they really don't do. They don't. It doesn't seem like they could do this kind of stuff in the standard universe. Like when they, you know, had the big tidal wave kill all those people in Manhattan. They barely talked about it afterwards. What I'd be really interested to see is, okay, we've had a bunch of states secede from the Union. We're having this, like, almost like this big war where you got Captain America coming in and just, like, kicking butt and taking names and, you know, an election and da-da. How much is that going to actually, I mean, it seems like a thing like that would irrevocably change the fabric of the nation. And I have a feeling that a year from now, you're going to be back to a Ultimate Universe that is pretty much standard Ultimate Universe telling stories, and it's you're not going to really feel the repercussions. Maybe I'll be wrong on that. I hope I am.
This storyline is a major factor in all the other Ultimate books right now. Just recently getting into the Spider-Man one, but like with the X-Men book and stuff like that, major aspect of it. In terms of them doing stuff in the Ultimate line that they can't do in the mainstream line. Let's touch again on that after we've talked about 16, because I've got a lot of comments on that.
Okay, well, let's move on to, okay. So you gave this a 3. I gave it a 3 also.
Okay.
I thought it was a good comic. I mean, it entertained me. I thought, you know, hey, there's a lot of cool stuff happening here. But as you pointed out, the lack of depth and, you know, certain internal story structure doesn't hold together when you think about it too hard. That kept it from going higher for me.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to the next issue, which is obviously Ultimates number 16. And we start with Cap taking actually giving a press conference. And at first, it looks like his agenda is act humble, like you're going to decline the job or whatever. Pretty much tell America to go man up and then go, you know, take the job, take the oath before anyone changes their mind. I thought that was, at first I thought he was going to turn it down even though they'd done the build up, but no, he actually takes the oath, which was interesting. But man, he is a very hands-on kind of a president. When he decides, let's go end the war between the Carolinas, his approach is just a very common sense one. Have Thor go get one of the leaders, have Iron Man go get the other leaders, bring them together, tell them the war is over, and they work for him now, or he's going to send his friends around.
Yeah, I know. Like, here, we're holding you guys. Shake hands and make nice, or we're going to beat you to death. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that would work in our Congress today, you know?
And
get a couple of superheroes just go in to slap some politicians around and say, you know what? Your job is not just to fight with each other and do a bunch of petty squabbling for political power. You actually need to do stuff to help the people of this country. you know, on that note, I was kind of like, well, maybe we need Captain America to go and take care of our government right now. And that's probably what Humphreys was, you know, going for with that. I'll give him the credit. I was entertained by that.
Oh, it was certainly entertaining. But when Cap goes and grabs that dictator of Detroit and, you know, pulls him out and suddenly everyone's cheering and stuff, I mean, I can believe that sort of a thing would happen, would make sense, etc. But there comes a point of almost
oversimplification.
I was not even going to say oversimplification, but I was going to make the comparison to the Authority over in the Wildstorm universe, where they just come in, take power, and say, deal with it. There's almost a thuggery protection racket, might makes right aspect to this.
Well, with the difference that they were not elected, but, you know, in this case...
That's a fair difference. That's a key difference, yeah.
But here, what I look at, the thing that struck me, especially with the Dictator of Detroit part, is, you know, just going in and grabbing the guy in charge is not necessarily going to magically, you know, there's a whole infrastructure under that guy of people that are, you know, doing stuff. It's not as simple as that. But for the, you know, the story point, especially, you know, sticking with the pacing here, that's a kind of a shorthand of what's happening. At least they show him flying around in a plane in this issue to be able to get from South Carolina to Detroit.
But in the span of a day, he single-handedly reunifies most of the country just by telling him, hey, you're back in, deal with it.
Yeah. Cap does not mess around.
No. Well, and when you've got, you know, Thor and Iron Man standing behind you, you know, I could just hear kind of the Repulsor kind of, you know, charging up kind of a sound, you know. It seems this, a little forced, literally.
This is the, to Marvel's credit, I will give them that, especially with the Avengers movie having come out on Tuesday, a week ago, about when you're listening to this. I mean, you've got Thor who, and you know, you're putting the push on Ultimates. You got a Cap that looks largely like the Cap in the movie. You got an Iron Man that's largely looks like, you know, you got Thor looks like, you know, largely like Thor. It's this Avengers is all very similar-ish. I mean, don't have the Hulk, but you know, it's a similar team. It's not something that someone who's only familiar with the Avengers from the movie, they're not going to pick this up and like, wow, what is, you know, what's going on here? I mean, and just like, again, you got action, 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 cut, 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 you know, it's like the scenes of one of these movies, you know.
But they're going to be wondering, why are the Avengers called the Ultimates? Why aren't they called the Avengers?
Yeah, there is that.
And while this guy looks like the Cap from the movie, he doesn't act like the Cap from the movies. I can't imagine that Captain America using such strong arm tactics. He would have been a lot more, I think, diplomatic, I would hope. And this whole thing, again, going back to the point you made on the previous issue there on how they're doing stuff they just can't do in the mainstream universe. Yes, they most certainly are. But this whole thing, this whole big arc for the Ultimate Universe, which has been going on for a little bit and continuing now from the Divided We Fall arc to the United We Stand arc, reminds me of that period of Wildstorm where they went through World's End and a couple other shifts in direction, you know, Number of the Beast, I think it was, or I forget what all the different little mini events were, where it seemed like they were just ricocheting around between different major plot point events. Let's try this, let's go left, let's go right, let's bank, let's turn, let's keep shifting the direction and shake things up until something finally clicks. And there's an aspect right now to the Ultimate Universe that is starting to feel that way. I'm not saying they're in that point, but the Wildstorm universe had a feeling of desperation at times of surely something will work. And I'm starting to feel like over at Marvel, they really don't know what to do with a second viable universe that frankly is, you know, surprisingly similar in many respects to the mainstream, certainly very different in a lot of respects. But they're doing all sorts of crazy stuff here in the Ultimate Universe that they can't do in the mainstream Marvel Universe, which is great, except they seem to be doing it simply because they can, not because it makes for solid stories, or they seem to have a clear end goal that I'm seeing, or a grand plan. Again, to your point of a year from now, is any of this going to have mattered? I don't know. I mean, the Ultimate Universe really seems to bounce back from world wars, intergalactic invasions, tidal waves, etc., surprisingly quickly and quietly.
I look at the Ultimate Universe when I read it as the summer movie playground of Marvel Comics. I mean, it's just like, it's just stuff happens. They try to be entertaining, but they don't seem to worry too much about that kind of stuff.
No, certainly not. And I think that's the point, is stories without the baggage. The problem is when you tell certain stories, there is certain baggage that's hard to ignore. If you have the Union completely fall apart and in the span of a day suddenly come back together or whatever, I mean, people are going to talk about that later. You know, if you have a tsunami or whatever wipe out New York City, you know, people are going to talk about that later. So trying to do those kinds of epic events and then kind of brush them off because you don't want to have any continuity baggage. That's kind of a interesting tightrope to kind of try to walk.
Mm-hmm.
And if you treat this along those lines as a roller coaster ride of let's just enjoy it in the moment, see where it goes, and have some fun with it, this actually was a really good issue. I mean, some of the stuff they did, while I thought it was incredible strong-arm tactics, there's a certain visceral, well, yeah, let's just try that a couple of times. You know, why don't we take the leaders of these two warring places and just force them to make peace and be done with it? It's entertaining, it's fun, whether it's realistic or not.
Yeah.
What I enjoyed most about this issue is the subplot we'd gotten last time. We revisit that character here. We get a reveal at the end, which was not what I was expecting, but it was fun, and I think really kicks the story into a new direction, because if it had been who I was thinking it was, that implies a certain degree of predictability, but now it's somebody else. It's like, well, now anything can happen with this character.
I read that ending, and I was like, that was pretty random. That was exactly my thought. You know?
Yeah, it was.
Because I didn't see, like, any kind of, you know, I don't know. I mean, because I haven't been reading any of the Ultimate comics. So I read issues 15 and 16 here, and it was just kind of like jumping in. I got pulled in by their advertising, saying, oh, that sounds pretty cool. Let me give that a try. Like, theoretically, they were hoping many other people would. So, you know, I can look at this and somewhat comment in the similar vein, right? Mm-hmm. To like what somebody who would have been coming in off the street, although I do have this other comics context to it. And, you know, and I get to that and it's like, I'm not convinced what the man on the street would be left to make of the end of issue 16, because I mean, I looked at it and I'm like, oh, that's, you know, okay, that's kind of random. I don't necessarily appreciate the significance of that, and they set it up like, doo doo doo, you know, here's
it's
the end.
It's not the significance of who he was, it's the significance of who he was not. And I think, again, trying not to spoil this, the conclusion that most people familiar with the comics or familiar with the movies would have come to as to who this bad guy was, there was a clear, well, it's probably going to be this guy. And the fact that it was not was, I thought, what was the big revelation. Not that this guy they pick is anyone in particular or anything special or that we know really anything what to expect. It's the fact that we don't know what to expect out of just a different character. To me is really what made the ending work for me. It's kind of, you're expecting the butler did it. No, it was the head chef. You know, it's kind of, well, I didn't see that coming, you know, and because it's not the butler, I would expect the chef to act differently. Not sure how he's going to handle this. You know what I mean? That kind of a situation. Again, they're leading us down one path and then trying to throw us a curve and go in a different direction.
Right, which I can appreciate. And I think that ending has a lot more or a very different impact on like people like yourself that have the context of the universe. And I'm saying it's like it didn't really have much of any kind of an impact on me, because I don't have that context in the Ultimate Universe. You know, so you're pulling in new readers. It seems like the story could have been structured in a way there that it would have been a payoff for you as well as a payoff for a casual reader just having been pulled in by the media hype.
I think anyone who's familiar with the movie universe, again, would have had certain expectations as to who the bad guy would have been. Whether they'd be satisfied with this or not is a different issue, but I think the writers are working with kind of the general consensus of what the Marvel Universe is based on the movies, more than what the comic readers think the consensus is based on the mainstream universe. And again, in the Ultimate Universe, they're trying to have their cake and eat it too. It's a different group of characters, but it's a similar-ish enough to the movies that they can make that play. Overall, I thought this was better than the previous issue, but not, you know, radically so. There were still aspects of that roller coaster ride kind of mentality to it. You think about it too much, it starts to fall apart. I would say this was just another average issue, gearing more towards the high three than the low three for the previous issue, but neither of these are things that I would expect somebody coming in off the street, seeing the media hype, deciding to actually venture into a comic store, pick them up, get past the, wait, these aren't the Avengers, wait, these aren't the real versions of the characters. Even if they can get past all that, I don't know that they'd necessarily be so enthralled with this that they would... I mean, they may come back for a few more issues, maybe, but I don't see them sticking around long term. I hope to be wrong on that. We could use a good influx of new readers. I think it'd be great. And this was a viable attempt at a play at that. I just don't think it's going to work.
Yeah, I gave it a 3 also. Personally, I was entertained by the issues. They were okay issues. I don't feel compelled to suddenly go out and buy a lot more Ultimate Comics for $3.99 a pop because of it. And I think that's the bottom line. Am I adding Ultimates to my pull list as a result of these two issues? The answer is no. Would I pick up issues if I see them, you know, in a dollar box? Sure. I've already been picking up, you know, the random issues of Ultimate books in dollar boxes for a buck when I see them. I think that the Ultimate books, to their credit, seem a little more amenable to people jumping in and just being able to get a bit of a entertaining payoff type of story, you know, if you pick up a random issue here or there, than some of the other more intertwined books do. I mean, certainly, you know, there are a lot of Marvel comics that if you just pick up some random issue, you're going to be like, what? You know?
Well, it's a smaller line. They try not to have crossovers often between the different titles. They may reference other titles and the events in them, but it's not like, read this issue of this title, then this issue of that title, and this issue of this other title, and, you know, rotate through. Which gives it a little more self-containment in the different titles. And I think they're very clearly trying to keep them as baggage-free as practical. I think if they were to do a little bit better job with the previously in page, that would help a lot towards both keeping it accessible and, you know, understandable.
Yeah. But
do they need two, you know, Marvel universes going concurrently is the question. And I think they're having a problem figuring out what the direction is and should be for the Ultimate Universe. And frankly, if I were them, I would be steering it more towards the movie kind of a status quo and using it as a bridge between the movies into the mainstream universe. But, you know, we'll see.
Okay. Move on to our indie book, which is Ghost Number 0 from Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a reprint from Dark Horse Comics Presents number 13 through 15. I actually stopped getting Dark Horse Presents a while ago, so it was new to me, as I'm sure it will be to a lot of people.
It was certainly new to me.
Yeah, and one of the decisions that I made was, you know, on Dark Horse Presents, you know, it's like $7.99 a month. It seems like most of the time when they tell a decent three-part, you know, story in Dark Horse Presents, they go ahead and they reprint it as an issue anyway. So I'm not missing a whole lot by not, you know, it's like I, you know, if it wasn't good enough for them to reprint it, then I probably didn't need to be reading it in the first place. At least that's the unintended consequence of this marketing mechanism that Dark Horse is using. So I just decided I might as well drop Dark Horse Presents and, you know, not be blowing that big pile of change every month, and every now and again I'll buy a $2.99 issue that seems interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I enjoyed this issue. It's got Phil Noto art. I think his art worked really well. Kelly Sue DeConnick is writing it. This story worked a lot better for me than her Captain Marvel debut, which we talked about a while back.
Yeah.
I thought this, and I read the Ghost stories back in Comics Big Greatest World. You know, when was that? Was that the late 90s, early 2000s? I don't remember exactly. It's been a while.
Mid-90s.
Mid-90s. It's been a while.
The series lasted like 36 issues, and then it like restarted almost immediately and went for another 22. So it went for quite a while. Yeah. This was a big hit for Dark Horse.
Yeah, I remember liking that stuff, but I don't have really concrete remembrance of the specifics of those issues, and I didn't go dig them out and reread them or anything. That said, I thought that, you know, this reintroduction of the character worked well on its own. I mean, you didn't need to have to know that there was ever a ghost before, particularly.
Mm-hmm.
Good setup here. I was entertained by this, and I thought, okay, you know, I'm gonna be picking up the series as it comes out.
It's interesting because I had read the first series of Ghost, which I just checked was 1995. Based on my records, it doesn't look like I got the second volume that went for 22 issues. I'm not sure off the top of my head why I made that decision. You know, I like the property. Certainly, I like the art here. I think they did a good job taking what was serialized as three parts, and it read just as if it were a single issue. I think I could tell where they would have broken it, but it didn't feel like, okay, go for a third, stop, go for a third, stop, go for a third, stop kind of storytelling. But this was a very different take on the property, and it was more of a twist on kind of a ghost hunter type TV show than the ghost. I mean, she certainly shows up here, and it works fine, but it really wasn't what I was kind of expecting, or frankly, what I think I kind of wanted out of this. And that's not to say they did a bad job, but, you know, we've talked a number of times about, you know, the baggage you're bringing in and what you're expecting and stuff. And if you're expecting A and they could tell B brilliantly, but B is very different than A, and you wanted A, I mean, you're at cross purposes with what the creative yes. team was trying to do. And I felt a little bit that way here. And it's funny because I had not really realized or remembered this was a reprint from the Dark Horse Presents, so I was thinking there was no real discernible reason this was a zero issue. It could have just been a regular first issue, but the fact that it is a reprint, okay, that makes sense, and is a I like how they're doing that. And again, I liked how this read fluidly throughout the issue. But at this point, you know, I thought it was fine. I thought it was okay. I'm going to give it a few more issues, mainly because I've already pre-ordered them, but I'm probably going to hold off pre-ordering any more until I've read some more. I didn't dislike what I got, but I'm not sold on this take.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a superhero-y kind of take. I had no particular expectation coming into this, other than my sole expectation on this was, wow, I love Phil Noto's art. I want to look at Phil Noto art for a whole issue, and I certainly got that. It did. The art was really nice. If you like Phil Noto's style, which I do, and you know, it told me an entertaining story. It was, again, it was very different from your standard superhero comic, which tends to be in my wheelhouse anyway. So I enjoyed it quite a lot. Now, this is the kind of thing, though, where almost as large a part of me enjoying this is the creative team as anything else, you know, particularly the artist. I think Kelly Sue DeConnick did a good job on telling this story. You know, this is the kind of thing that if they switched the artist on it down the yeah. line, and it's not Phil Noto and it's an artist that I'm not that fond of, this is the kind of thing where I'm not convinced that I would stick around just on the sake of the property, you know, if it didn't have a creative team that I was really in love with.
I can understand that.
And that's a challenge for any new title. I mean, it's a little easier on a creator-owned book, right? Because on a creator-owned book, it's like, well, the creative team is part and parcel with the property. You're not just going to get some, you know, random dudes coming in and doing it. But Ghost is a Dark Horse-owned character and world. What's actually more interesting to me is if this is the dipping their toe in reimagining other characters from the comics' greatest world from back in the 90s. Which, if,
I would
you know, they
be
did
surprised
updated.
If they did. Most of the others were not that successful for them. There are a handful of others they could do.
Barbed wire, I'm thinking. I mean, they
that
had a
was
movie
the
for
only
it.
Other one, really, that lasted any length of time for them. Most of the others fell away pretty quick.
I could see X. I could see X and barbed wire just off the top of my head, especially if they were sort of, I mean, again, this is a reimagining, but it's the good kind of reimagining, in my opinion, where, like we were talking about Valiant last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that's a reimagined property. You don't need to have read or even know about the previous one, but it's not in any way counter to or disrespectful of the original one, where it's like so off in the other direction and it's like, you know, wow, how is, you know, it's just like it's a name and, you know, not a whole lot else. I thought this was a well done reimagining. If they did something like this, updating the barbed wire or the X character, I think that they could tell some good stories today with those characters. And if I looked at some of the other ones, they probably could have done a couple more. But as I recall from Comics Greatest World, a lot of those characters were sort of forced even in the first place and, you know, are better left in the graveyard of past comic book heroes. But I recall Barbed Wire and X being entertaining enough properties that I think they could bring those into today and do a good job of it. But
well, those Catalysts of Change, Agents of Change, whichever one that was another they might be able to do. And certainly X and Barbed Wire, they've tried a few times to keep those going. Those are some of the more successful ones. I guess for me, this was enough of a rethinking, reimagining kind of a take on the character that it veered far enough from what I had considered the book to have been before, the property to have been before, that I would categorize it as fairly different than philosophically than the Valiant one, where they're updating, they're revitalizing, but they're not radically rethinking most of those characters. And while this is not to the extent of, say, the cross-gen stuff we got a year or two back, where it's, keep the name and the basic premise, but everything else is fair game for, you know, mainly Mystic. But to a degree with the other one they did.
Sigil.
This had a very different feel, I thought, than the previous Ghost stuff. So to say it's just kind of it's a reimagining. It's not what I would consider more of a revitalization of keep most of the stuff pretty much the same. The whole introduction to this Ghost Hunter team is fundamentally different. The way they portray the character seems pretty different. But I mean, it's going to click with some people, not so much with others. And for me, I'm still on the fence. Would I like to see them dive back into their library and pull a few other things out that, you know, either as was or with some rethinking could be very viable? Yeah, it'd be fun. I'd like to see Dark Horse strengthen their output in terms of they've got a lot of really good creator-owned stuff. They've got a lot of really good licensed stuff. But they've got a lot of company-owned properties that they could be leveraging better, and I think it'd be good for the company to do that. And certainly this is a good start in that direction.
I gave this one a 4. I was entertained by it.
I gave this a 3, and again, some of that may just be that what I was expecting and what I got didn't quite jive. This was just okay to me. It wasn't bad, but it didn't hook me as a... And maybe the first issue itself, maybe that will. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I would recommend this, though, people who didn't pick it up, if you see the Zero issue, give it a look. You might like it, might not, but certainly you can flip through it in the store and see if it looks like something that's worth $2.99. You get 24 pages of story, you get the 3 8-page segments from Dark Horse Present reprinted, and if you count, you know, 8, 16, 24, you can, as you pointed out, see where the breaking points were. But in just reading this as an issue, it held together as one cohesive story.
Yeah, I was, again, very pleased with that aspect of it.
Yeah. Okay, that was all I had for this week.
Cool. I read everything else in my pile. One thing I want to talk about just briefly is the DC Universe Presents number 0. They had a bunch of different stories in here. They had one for OMAC, one for Mr. Terrific, one for Hawk and Dove, one for Blackhawks. They also had a Dead Man, which was, of course, the original feature of DC Universe Presents. Men of War, which is one of the other titles that went away, and therefore didn't get a zero issue, didn't really have any characters that I think would have lent themselves to that, except maybe the Sergeant Rock guy. But what I found interesting was the sixth title and the sixth property that was not in here of Static. I'm surprised they didn't do anything with that character, set up the Dakota characters a little better or something here. So that omission I found interesting in terms of, I think it was clearly intentional. I'm curious as to why. We also got the final issue of Captain Atom and Voodoo this week. Or was Voodoo in that shipment, or is that the one that just came out, actually? I'm getting them confused. But the final issue of a few books, because the 0 month is when they're actually overlapping. No, Voodoo just came out in the shipment I got yesterday, so it's not in the one we're talking about this week. But we did get the final issue of Captain Atom. And it's funny, because as much as the Resurrection Man zero issue kind of cleanly closed off that title, Captain Atom just kind of gave his origin, and yeah, he'll be around in the universe somewhere. Making that title feel like it just kind of faded away than actually ended. And we got the red shirt issue of Star Trek this week, which I really enjoyed. That's continuing to be a really good title. If you're into Star Trek and not reading what they're doing over at IDW on that, you're missing out on some great stuff. Final issue of Spider-Man, which I enjoyed. I thought that was pretty good stuff. Obviously set before the whole, you know, nation dividing and stuff storyline we're getting these days, we just talked about. Young Justice 20 kicks into the Invasion, which is the second season of the TV series. Great TV series. Highly recommend that cartoon. And then we finally get Shazam and stuff in Justice League Zero this week, which basically the backup features they've been using to lead into that I thought were, frankly, a waste of time and didn't seem to be needed based on the Zero issue. So those are a few other things I read. That's pretty much all I got.
Okay. Join us next week when we discuss Talon number 0 from DC, Incredible Hulk number 14 from Marvel, and Rachel Rising number 11 from Abstract Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.